Well, Turkey Day has come and gone.
Indeed.
And, yeah, I call it Turkey Day quite specifically because I've taken the political and cultural and social and biological ramifications of the Thanksgiving holiday and shot them into the sun. And now it's a day. How did I describe it on Facebook? It might have something to do with the harvest, but you don't have to dress up. And also you cook and you eat. And that's pretty much it. And it's on a Thursday for some reason.
I was actually discussing with my wife, Carol, this Thanksgiving. It's like, can we just drop the entire history of the day? Just reinvent it to be just, this is a day where you get together with people you love and be thankful about things.
Well,
it's not about that. Sure it is.
It is. It totally is. For right. 99% of the people who do this thing, it's a family holiday. Actually, for 99% of the people who celebrate this holiday, it's about interminable political discussions with outstaff family members. This is Ask an Atheist with Sam Olvey, I guess. My name is Sam. 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Toll free nationwide. Joining me is Dave.
Hello.
And Dave is why I said the full name, because he gets on my case if I don't. And Tom, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Am I the only one here who likes those political discussions on Thanksgiving?
Well, if you have, you must be the uncle everybody talks about.
Well.
I have not really encountered that in the way a lot of people have. My biological family actually all tend to be fairly liberal people in living in the Chicago area. And so last time when I went back home for the holidays, everybody held back to find out just like I was the possible outlier.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was worried that I was going to say like, oh, well, Trump did something. Like they figured I wasn't going to like the guy, but I might have like some cogent point about why it's okay that he's president. And then, they said, how do you feel about Trump? And then, the sort of the torrent of expletives issue forth from me. And there was a family sigh of relief. Things can continue on as normal. So I see people talk about that, and it does seem really, I can see why it would get, for a lot of reasons, why it would get on everybody's case, you know, why it would be such a problem, especially if you got somebody who says that you know, you should be shot into the sun for, having a different identity or whatnot, and then you have to, you know, pretend to be nice to this person and have dinner with them while they're just belly aching about everything that's wrong with the world, and everything that's wrong with the world just so happens to be you.
I do have that uncle. I have this uncle who on Facebook, every time I see a post by him, I just like either I scroll past when I'm feeling smart or I read it when I'm feeling, you know, self-destructive and want to get angry at the internet.
I used to torture that uncle.
I got to the point, and this is something that I heard a long time ago that really sticks it down to me. It's like, look, I am willing to discuss opinions forever, but we aren't going to debate facts. If you can't get down with facts, then we got no place to talk. And my uncle does not deal in facts. He deals in, you know, propaganda. And,
right.
You know, those stories. And so I stopped engaging because it's like, what's the point? You know, you can't even agree on the most basic understanding of what is happening in the world. He literally tried to tell me you can't trust climate scientists because they need money for research vessels. He went for the...
Oh, no, they're going for the big bucks for themselves. All that money those scientists make.
On the two sides of this debate, you have oil companies on one side and scientists on the other, and he thought the scientists were the ones who were monetarily motivated.
Right.
That's not somebody that can have a discussion
with. No, there's a logic to that. If you already have all the money, you have some space to tell the truth because you don't need any more.
No.
The
people who have all that money are the ones who want more.
Right. Yeah. Because now it's not so much just having enough to live. It's getting on the high score list.
It's power.
It's so that you can. So on the list in Forbes, you can write SEX next to your score.
Now, and at least that uncle, he was actually an in-law. We actually thought we had common ground that Joe McCarthy was not a good guy, and we could agree on that.
That's the common ground.
I feel like, and it's funny because I feel like that's the right amazing. Is actually peeling back from that. The right is actually
absolutely.
And Coulter thinks Joe McCarthy's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Has anybody else noticed the rehabilitation of Richard Nixon?
I had not.
Ooh.
Yeah, people are talking. Every once in a while, you get somebody who's trying to make Richard Nixon sound like a good guy.
Oh.
And
I remember Richard Nixon. Oh, no.
I feel like I can actually make a case for Richard Nixon being not as bad of a guy as he is painted, but that is only in juxtaposition with the current administration.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, yeah.
No, I can't even do that. No, Richard Nixon was competent.
Well, yeah, there was that.
But that's not this segment. There is the news that everybody's talking about, and I imagine that the Thanksgiving holiday would be celebrated somewhat differently. If it worked out this way. An American man was killed by members of an isolated tribe on India's Sentinel Island after he illegally tried to visit them. John Allen Chow, who sometimes lived in Washington State, was described as an extreme adventurer who reportedly wanted to evangelize the Sentinelese aboriginals, who are hunter-gatherers. Indian fishermen allegedly had transported Chow several times to the remote islands in the Bay of Bengal over a period of time, but after his most recent visit, the fishermen saw Chow shot with arrows and dumped on a beach by the Sentinelese. Local media reported that Chow had given his fisherman escorts a note saying that Jesus had bestowed him with the strength to go to the most forbidden places on earth. The Indian government restricts contact with the island tribes, whose population may number somewhere between 39 and 150 because of risk from disease. It has also been illegal to photograph or record Andaman peoples, which include the Sentinelese, since 2017. Everybody's talking about the accident on, well, it's not really an accident, it's more of an intentional.
Why does this remind me of the opening, that very first opening scene from the first episode of American Gods, where the Vikings show up on American shores and the guy just ends up instantly just filled with arrows?
Oh, okay.
Oh, man, it's really, it's actually funny.
Okay.
Which, you know, it's like that kind of, yeah, funny, you know?
Yeah. It just blows me away because it's like, for one, how can you not see value in having as a historical marker this like existing tribe that is a perfect example of the way all humans lived 20,000 years ago? And not all humans specifically like lived as this tribe, but like
right.
A small hunter gatherer without any real outside influence who have very carefully like preserved their own way of life to the point that even the Indian government is like, no, this is something worth protecting. You can't go there anymore.
And to an evangelical Christian, this tribe represents what?
The last holdouts.
An opportunity?
Yeah, it's an opportunity.
Yeah.
To make them just like everybody else. I'm not, there's a part of me that would like to go to people and say, you don't have to do this. You don't have to.
I have a theory.
But the problem is they kind of do. As one of the few remaining uncontacted tribes on Earth, they don't have, you know, they don't have a lot of the reason that they are protected is because any incursion by the outside world onto their island represents a severe biological hazard that could wipe out
literally a threat
everyone on the island.
Yeah.
So this guy is not just a front for genocidal ideology. He's a front for a real sort of biological warfare.
Right.
And which may now commence because he went to that island. He doesn't have to do anything. All he has to do, if he coughed or sneezed,
breathe on them
or bled, which right. I presume he did. You know, it could be a bad time for these people.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. The entire, like, here's the thing. In the notes, the headline on this starts with the word dumb.
Right.
And it's just like, there's, you want to say this is somewhat tragic or something like that. Like, there's a sense of like, you know, a man is dead, but all I can think of is like, no, that's, okay. That one word sums it up. This whole thing is just dumb.
I do have a theory that, I mean, failing evangelizing tribes, you know, the other big thing is martyrdom.
Yeah.
He might actually be celebrated.
He is being celebrated, and people want to, and there's certain Christian organizations that want the Sentinelese brought to justice for murdering this guy. I don't know how that would look. I mean, you're basically asking that the entire tribe be murdered
put on
at that
trial.
Point.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, you put them on trial, they're going to get sick. You're murdering them.
Yes.
And this is not the first time. Years ago, I think it was 2014 or 2015, two fishermen who were illegally fishing near Sentinel Island washed up on shore and were killed. And it's like, so this guy, this is known, and this is why a lot of these rules were passed, is they're uncontacted for a reason.
They've worked very hard to stay that way.
Yeah, and there are laws where, you know, I've even seen atheists talk about this, well, no one should murder another human being. Okay, but whatever, granted, fine, but that's besides the point. The Indian government has said, if you go to this island, they will kill you. You can possibly kill them just by being there. Do not go to this island. You will die.
Are the people who want to put them on trial actually, do they have jurisdiction? Are these people Indians who
they're probably
American
around here somewhere. Yeah. Because all they can see is the crime committed by others. You know, what is it, the plank in your eye and the sockeye salmon in the other guy's eye or whatever?
Well, and I do know the Indian government is actually, there's a group of fishermen that helped this guy get to the island. They basically, they left at night, they went to the island, then daybreak.
Smuggled him. Got
in a kayak and went there. And those fishermen are on trial for, I believe it's like, it's the equivalent of manslaughter. It's homicide without intent or something like that, as well as breaking the quarantine of this island. So,
right,
you know, the people who are being put on trial is not the tribe, it's the people who enabled this guy to get there.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's the right move.
And I love how he says that Jesus has enabled him to go to the most remote places on Earth. You didn't walk there. You didn't walk across the Bay of Bengal to get to this island. You took a boat. You took a motorboat. Thank the God of internal combustion. thank your true Lord and Master, the God of petroleum, which got you to this island. Don't lie to me. You're not Magellan. You're not those weird Catholic guys who apparently would teach everybody Latin or something.
Hey, funny, what happened to Magellan again?
I think he got killed. Yeah.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah. Oddly enough.
A lot of those explorers.
Yeah.
Captain Cook. Yeah.
Yeah. They're dead. Yeah. Well, I mean, they're all dead, given that it was several hundred years ago. But the point being that most of them died en route.
Did not die of old age.
Right. They did not die of old age. Yeah. I don't know what more could be said for this one. This is something I've paid a little bit, the Sentinelese people is something I've paid a little bit attention to, because it's in one of the most major, it's like shipping happens very near there, fishing happens very near there. They're under the jurisdiction of the Indian government. This isn't like some remote place in the middle of the Amazon Island where there's no real civilization, or Amazon rainforest, sorry, did I say Amazon Island?
Yeah,
I did.
It's
whatever.
A big island.
That's a huge island. The Amazon Island. I'm rolling.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. You know, where there's no civilization nearby. This is like if there was an uncontacted tribe like between here and Burien on I-5. I mean, the scale is different, of course, but
point being, it's like, it's not like this tribe is unaware that there's technology in the world and things have changed and not everyone lives like they do.
Right.
They just want nothing to do with it.
They want nothing to do with it. And so calling them uncontacted, which is how I was introduced to the concept, seems a bit of a misnomer because they see boats.
Right.
People wash up. Yeah. They get stabbed. Yeah. But they want to be left alone.
So first approximation, they're uncontacted.
Yeah, the only reason they're under Indian jurisdiction is because we have these awesome nation state ideas, and that just happens to be where we drew the line. So yeah, leave them alone. Why don't we try that? Not letting the people who want to be left alone, and not relying upon the god of internal combustion to bring your twin gods of genocide, like some weird Warhammer 40K scenario, into their land and murder them and introduce them to the land of taxes, blue jeans, and whatever.
So now I'm wondering what this Chow guy's little painted statue would look like in Warhammer.
Hey, free. I don't want to make fun of the guy because he's, well, no, I do want to make fun of him. What the heck am I saying? I just default to this respect position, yeah. But no, not too soon. Don't do dumb things. This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic, 844 753 7842. We get to the break, we come back, we're going to talk about Proud Boys and Bill Maher. Not that Bill Maher's a Proud Boy, but I don't know that would surprise me.
I wonder what squid ink tastes like.
Hey, you guys, I got some squid ink.
I want to try some, too.
Ah! My hand is turning into a tentacle!
We are experiencing technical difficulties.
Don't buy squid ink. It's dangerous.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. The Canadian founder of the Proud Boys, a men's only organization of self-styled Western chauvinists, has severed ties with the group after the FBI categorized it as an extremist group with ties to white nationalism. Gavin McInnes, who co-founded Vice Media in the 90s but was ousted in the late 2000s, released a YouTube video in which he read a scripted statement officially disassociating himself from the Proud Boys in all capacities forever. He maintained that he was never the leader, only the founder. McInnes also stated that those who espouse white nationalism or white supremacy don't exist, and blamed poor journalism, rumors, and lies for distorting the image of his former group, which he still sees as the greatest fraternal organization in the world. According to the FBI warning to Washington State Police, the Proud Boys have contributed to the recent escalation of violence at political rallies held on college campuses in cities like Charlottesville, Portland, and Seattle, and the FBI further warned that the group is actively recruiting in the Pacific Northwest.
Don't you? It's like, guys, I did not create a racist organization. I created a sexist organization. Come on.
Yeah. I created a chauvinist organization on several fronts.
And he's disassociating himself to do them a favor?
To keep their
sentence down for some reason. Something about him will keep them from.
Yeah. Apparently, there's seven Proud Boys on trial in New York, and for some reason, this is supposed to reduce their sentence.
I know a little bit about propaganda. I'm not on a professional level, but I'm a propaganda aesthete, I guess, maybe. And this is propaganda. This is total propaganda. Somebody who's trying to tell you the truth would say, well, there might be racist members of my organization. Like when I'm on the show and I say, hey, I believe there are white supremacist atheists. I've met them. And my point is on the show is to promote atheism, but I'm trying to do it honestly. I'm trying to tell you what exists out there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more white nationalist atheist than I'm actually comfortable with.
Telling the truth is never all one way.
Right.
Ever.
And so this guy who says white national, well, one, it, from the brief, it sounds like he's saying white nationalists don't exist, which
yes.
is hilarious.
That is actually, yeah.
that is
he
actually
says.
What he's saying.
He's
they
saying
don't
that,
exist.
Yeah, there's nobody who espouses white nationalism. That's just a myth made up by the media.
Oh, boy. And history.
Who are all those people espousing white nationalist ideals?
I mean, have you seen Birth of a Nation?
Actually, Carol watched
which version?
It, or at least a clip of it recently.
Yeah.
I've never actually seen it.
Like the original, the 1919 one?
Did they do a gritty reboot of Birth of a Nation? Oh,
yes.
They totally did. No, I remember now.
It did not have quite the... The KKK is a great thing.
It wasn't so much a gritty reboot as it was a turning the subject on its head kind of thing. Right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah,
the modern version is
right. Okay.
Up.
That's going on the list. Birth of a Nation. That would be number one because it's in the public domain, so I don't have to pay nobody. But it's also. It's a movie that was released in theaters in the United States about how great the KKK is.
And wasn't it, I mean, it was renowned for all the innovations in filmmaking.
Yeah.
And they paired all this amazing stuff to do with the art of filmmaking with this racist stuff. Triumph of Will or something.
And it was the very first film ever to be screened in the White House.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yep. Woodrow Wilson screened that
and
in the first movie
I think
ever.
He wrote, it's like history writ with lightning or something like that.
Something like that, yeah. He was a big fan of that movie.
I learned about this movie. I knew this movie existed and I'd seen a fair chunk of it, but I learned a lot of the details like that from Mike Gillis. So he likes going on about that movie. The other thing, I think we can make a fairly clear case, given about 10 minutes and Wikipedia, that and I don't even have to use, I can just use the talk pages of Wikipedia to prove that white nationalists exist.
Right.
Because I would just use the talk pages to show you them.
Mm-hmm. They're hiding.
Yeah.
Not these days.
Comment pages on the YouTube anywhere. Like YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. But the other thing is, if he was perhaps saying, Proud Boys, are they really called Proud Boys? Yeah, they
that's
are called
name.
Proud Boys. That's their name.
That's
right. Okay.
Official, formal.
Good job.
But there are a whole bunch of different organizations that appear to be unrelated to each other that seem to actually be a lot more closely aligned.
So this group, Bro Camp.
Really?
That's what it felt like every time I've met them.
Oh,
it's like
it wasn't actually called that. Okay.
No. I've met these people in bars here in the Pacific Northwest, given that I live here and this is a place where they're actively recruiting. They're racists. Everyone I've met so far, everyone I've sat down and had a drink with so far, no exceptions, were racists.
So they all have really good beards?
No. No.
I mean, that one, the head of it seemed to.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of the...
Never mind.
I prefer the full facial hair I can actually grow.
My beard does not make me racist.
No.
I have a straggly beard.
Yeah. No, My beard hides my double chin.
A left wing beard, yeah.
And the Proud Boys were holding the Proud Boys were involved with some sort of white nationalist-y kind of rally here in Tacoma.
Yeah, this was a couple weeks ago, and I believe a total of 5 of them showed up.
Yeah.
And 88 counter-protesters.
Yeah, which is an unfortunate. I wasn't counted, so it's 89.
That's kind of a lower ratio than most of these white nationalist
rallies.
That's
true. Yeah,
I'm actually surprised that the numbers were so low for the counter protesters.
Yeah, I took pictures of that. I went down there and then I came up here and recorded the show.
Oh, right.
So
I was in Portland watching soccer.
I think you made the right call. Becky and Ron John were talking about this. Well, okay, Ron John was talking about it, and Becky was going beep. Because she had laryngitis, and all she could do was sound like Captain Pike. An interesting factor here is that he's Canadian, and if the FBI is labeling the Proud Boys, an organization he founded, as a terrorist organization or as an organization that foments domestic terrorism, and the FBI is saying these white nationalist groups are in fact fomenting domestic terrorism, that makes him a foreign supporter of terrorism, which means all of his stuff can be seized.
Mm-hmm.
And
million-dollar home in the suburbs of New York City.
Yeah, and he can be sent back to his home country of Canada, which, I mean, doesn't seem like much of a sentence, except for the fact that he goes home with nothing. All of his stuff.
Right.
We take all of his things. All of his things are now the state's. The state takes all of your things and then sends you back because you're a terrorist. Like, so, that's a law you are nominally in favor of, aren't you? Right? That's kind of your thing? That terrorists never win?
So this is the big favor he's doing for those people getting sentenced?
Yeah.
It's to keep him from losing everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Also, Canada, please stop sending us your jerks. I just noticed
We get it. We don't want them either.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. You have islands. Pick one.
You have Yukon.
Yeah. I mean, we have islands too, but we don't want them. That's, yeah. Well, anyway.
Go find somewhere with a lot of bears and put them there.
What kind of bears, Dave? What species of bear?
Polar, grizzly, you name it, whatever is most violent.
Not
those kind.
I'm just going to let that. I'll let that image simmer for a moment before I continue. The BBC has announced it will not include an atheist or humanist meditations or teachings for its longstanding and popular 3-minute Thought of the Day segment. The British Humanist Association stated that the exclusion of humanists from the Thought of the Day sends a very clear message that humanists do not have as much to contribute as religious people to one of BBC's most high-profile ethical slots. I guess you could call it popular because it's known. But I've never talked about how I've never heard anybody. I watch a lot of British television. I've got a lot of BBC. I've got a lot of friends, you know, on the other side of or on the other side of the continent and the pond. Because from here, it's not just the other side of the pond. There's like most of North America. I mean, it might be easier to go the other way. It's either the continent or the pond, or the pond or the continent.
Over the pole.
Yeah, over the pole. Yeah. Send us your media as you would an ICBM.
Well, I'm a big fan of BBC News, and yeah. I've never seen this segment.
I have. They would include Thought of the Day. They would occasionally include Thought of the Day in the World Service, so I would hear it. And I don't know... I don't know if that popular is the way I would describe it. Well known is how I would is how I would describe it. Giving the vicar something to do is how I would describe it.
Are these mostly Church of England people?
Usually, yeah. I mean, you know, the UK does kind of have a state religion thing going on. I mean, in the weirdest, in the least religious-y of ways.
But it is still a state religion.
But it's still a state religion.
And I would guess that they would go out of their way to get somebody in charge of it who might.
Yeah,
follow that line.
Yeah, but I mean, they're starting to spread their wings a little bit out and include people of other religions as well, except for those of us out here in crazy.
Oh,
yeah, and so it's the BBC.
This is another example of a concept I've always had about the thing about atheists and agnostics and nuns, if you will, is the way I describe it is it's first out. If you think of a group of people, atheists are going to be the first out.
Right.
Everyone else is going to be like, well, we disagree with Muslims and Hindus on all sorts of
but
stuff.
At least they're not atheists.
They believe something. Yeah. So atheists are out. And then after you get the atheists out, well, the Hindus, you know, at least the Muslims and the Jews and the Christians all believe in the Abrahamic religion. So Hindus are out. And then once, well, you know, the Muslims don't believe in the Bible and the Old Testament and the Torah, they're kind of the same thing. So the Muslims are, you know, there's always a first out and that's atheists. And this seems like a perfect example of that. Like, the thought of the
and
day.
And the process by which thought of the day is occurring, it seems like this in reverse, where...
Last in, if you will.
Yeah, we're last in. Because I believe they've had people from other religions on thought of the day. We're just the outstanding thing. I don't know. It would be, I think, a big milestone for broadcasting on the BBC to have humanist and atheist inclusion... Especially considering just how much of the population would qualify as humanist or atheist in the UK.
Right. Or Jedi Knight.
Jedi Knight. Yeah. Have they had a Jedi Knight on Thought of the Day?
I don't know.
I would listen to that. I would.
I would want them to come up, not use the voice, but just in a perfectly normal voice, but use the syntax of Yoda when giving their speech. And so they come up as like, no, it's I couldn't even do it.
Come on, BBC's not going to do that.
Yeah, 20 minutes talking about midichlorians.
Yeah.
On the other hand,
blasphemy, sir, blasphemy.
On the other hand, there is there might be a good reason not to have atheists and humanists on the thought of the day.
Huh?
Bill Maher published a blog post blaming the problems of the nation. This nation. We're back
in the U.S.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we're back in the U.S. Partially on comic books. That scream you're hearing is Mike. The host of HBO's Real Time wrote a post called Adulting after the death of comics luminary Stan Lee. In it, Maher claims that when he was young, everyone knew that comics were only for kids, but that around 20 years ago, people stopped giving up about kids stuff. He finishes by suggesting that we focus on stupid stuff, which allows for people like Donald Trump to be elected.
You know,
maybe the BBC can just not have Bill Maher on.
I'd be okay with that.
I think the best chance to, like, even if I agreed with this point, which I don't, and we will get into this, but even if I were to agree with this point about, like, the difference between kids stuff and normal stuff or adult stuff, I don't think the best time to make that point is when you're writing a post about the death of one of the greatest figures in an entire industry.
Right.
Stan Lee is one of those, you know... Every industry has its name, you know. Like, in computers, it'll be Bill Gates or Steve Jobs. Like, there's a million people who do really amazing things to computers, but that's the name you know.
Right.
In comics, it's Stan Lee. I'd say most people probably couldn't even name some of the other big ones. Yeah. Jack Kirby or, you know.
Bill Gaines, but not many.
Yeah, you know, these giant, Stan Lee was a step above all of them. And so to use his death as a chance to sit down and say, hey, all you people who like his stuff, you're stupid.
Yeah, you know, who else does that? That sounds a little like a certain president. You know? Well, oh, well. But he's an atheist.
You know, I...
You know? Yeah, Bill Maher is an atheist.
I want Bill Maher to listen to this episode now just to know that, so he can hear that he just got compared to Donald Trump.
I wasn't going to compare to Donald Trump. The what's-her-face that we mentioned in the last segment, she's a known conservative critic who every time something happens just has to get the snarky line in.
Ann Coulter.
Yeah. Bill Maher is like on the chessboard on one side, like there's a bishop that's Ann Coulter, and I picked bishop quite intentionally. And on the other side, the bishop is Bill Maher. They as far as I'm concerned, in the American meme space, they basically encounter the exact same. They basically inhabit the exact same niche on both sides of that particular political border.
Right.
Well, I think Bill Maher gets it right more often than Ann Coulter does.
I'm not certain. Now,
oh, sometimes
I say
he does.
I
but
say
when
that.
He does it,
well,
man.
Ann Coulter gets it right occasionally too. I think I think of once, like in the 90s. I mean, I liked Religious when I saw it. You know, I thought that was pretty well done. But he wasn't being very Bill Maher-y at the time.
Right.
And it just seems like, you know, insulting people when something bad happens to them is his stock in trade, is his bid for relevancy.
Right.
And so when I saw this, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's Bill Maher being Bill Maher. I don't really care.
Yeah. Well, and here's sort of the main concern of mine is part of the problem is that in the wider world, you don't get to pick your sort of spokespeople.
Yeah.
You know, we don't get to choose which atheists end up being popular and being covered and being known.
Being our spokesperson.
Like, we don't get to choose that. We're kind of stuck with guys like Richard Dawkins and Bill Maher, which is a problem because, for one, the atheist community is very fractured and very complex and very nuanced. There's a lot of different sides to a lot of different facets. And so you can't have just a handful of voices saying this is what atheists think.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that to the wider culture who isn't willing to dive headfirst into that sort of complex mess, that's what they're going to see. Oh, atheists think this. So when Bill Maher goes off about like a beloved figure is a representative of everything that's wrong with America, then they're going to see that atheist or think that atheists think that. And we've had the same argument about on the other side. Like, how many times has Pat Robertson said something really stupid, but nobody on a more, you know, moderate sort of centrist religious point of view is willing to say, no, he's an idiot and nobody likes him. You know, they kind of protect their own.
But now you're kind of making privilege, our lack of privilege, our fault. When Pat Robertson says something stupid, we go, wow, Pat Robertson is stupid. And right. we don't think that, you know, necessarily we just assume that not every Methodist thinks that. We just assume that sure. the huge majority of
ethnic
Christians
have to, they don't say
world.
A word, though.
They don't.
All those,
but they don't have to.
That's true.
Really?
Yeah, they totally don't.
That, no, because they don't have to defend
because
us.
Because it's a free country or because rational people will assume it.
They don't have to say it because we know that that's not what the majority of Christians
and
think.
That's, like, and that's the position of religious privilege in this country, is to know that when a crazy person from your religion says something crazy, that doesn't automatically reflect on you. Where I have to, I'm occasionally put in a position to have to somehow defend Bill Maher because we're atheists and we have to stand up for each other. And I'm like, no, I actually don't care for Bill Maher very much.
Right.
He's not really my guy. He doesn't really stand for what I stand for.
An example of this that outside of sort of religious thing, think of it this way. Like, if you go to England, what can you tell me about the English justice system? What, how their courts are built, how they work, who's like, who is their top court, where they, you know.
Right. It's different enough. I'm not really sure.
You wouldn't know.
It's kind of similar to ours.
But not really.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like, you go there and they will know exactly who our Supreme Court is. They'll know a number of justices. They'll know what decisions they're making because.
Barrister versus the solicitor.
We are in that privileged position where everyone needs to know our business, but we don't have to spend the time learning theirs.
Well, I mean,
and that's where
to
Christians
be fair,
are.
That's not so much privilege in that in an election year, our joke of an election system might come and kill you.
This is true.
So there's privilege and then there's whatever that is, which is a different thing entirely.
Sure. And you know, no metaphor is perfect, but that's a place Christians are.
No, I get your point.
They're big enough.
No, it's awesome. In going back to, you know, who gets to be our spokespeople, you know, people who end up on top of that pile, they have sharp elbows and they're charismatic average.
I was going to make that point. It was like, there was a point in my career as an outspoken atheist. It's like, you know, I'm you know, fat and ugly or whatever, but I got a decent voice and I can craft a decent sentence and I can make a good point. Maybe I could be a spokesman. And then I saw being the blood sport that leads to being a talking head, even in the atheist community. And I just had this moment where I was hanging out with some other atheists, and not even like the people you see on TV, just other atheists who also see themselves as kind of iconoclastic. Mm. And I just had this moment where I was like, perhaps not.
Yeah, charismatic people with sharp elbows, no matter who they're representing, tend to have a certain agenda.
Yeah.
You know, that's their agenda.
You have to have a level of narcissism just to be there.
Yeah. Right.
And yeah, Bill Maher is very, if nothing else, he's very good at narcissism.
Yeah. And it's like my concern with the name of the show. And I don't like the fact, I've never liked that my fact was a name on it, even though I was kind of outvoted on that one. I don't like it because I don't have the narcissism to appreciate it, or I don't like it because I'm afraid of the narcissism I have.
If it's going to have your name on it, that's the right way it should be there.
I suppose.
I feel like we're at, 4 years of having this argument and you're still fighting it. It answers that question enough.
Okay, all right.
But
let me know what it is off the air. We'll have it as a quiz for our listeners. Is Sam afraid of his own narcissism, or does Sam just hate narcissism? Answers now. If you win, you get to have lunch with me.
Yes.
Because that's not narcissistic.
Yeah, you won't show up because you're too embarrassed. It's like you just call in a credit card number. It's like, just pay for the meal with this.
Yeah, just whatever. Get them. What are they drinking? No, not that. Get them something else, which is the thing I'm known to do.
There's one other aspect of the story I do kind of want to cover, and this is sort of a personal, like, I don't know, bugaboo of mine, if you will. Forgive me for using that term. I kind of hate it. But it's this concept that what Bill Maher is trying to say is that when he was a kid, everyone knew comics were for kids, and you grew up and you read books without pictures. And, you know, it's a sanctimonious thing that thing that I don't like has no value, and therefore I get to blame everyone who likes it for everything that's wrong.
Right.
And this is something I run into a lot in a lot of different things. Can we just let people like things?
Yeah. And throughout history, things that were popular or low culture or later venerated, you know, those ancient Greek, the pottery with the depictions on it and, you know, the heroes and the gods and things on the pot. Mm-hmm. Those were all basically the comic books of their time. Right. I mean, they were not high art. And now it's like,
I've had
incredibly well, you know, they're revered.
I did have them described as Grecian veggie tales.
Yes. Well, when you look at this example, comics are a medium. They're whatever you want them to be.
Yeah.
There are really sort of shallow kids comics. There are really deep, thoughtful comics. There are comics written for adults. There's comics written for kids. There's comics written for like all sorts of, you know.
And then wait a minute. Those are, you know, for adults, graphic novels. See, that's not a comic. It's a graphic novel.
Well, it depends on how you buy
that
it.
That battle
it
still
isn't.
Rages 30 years later.
But yeah, it's just like the entire thing is like, how can you can't just, my mom used to do this. She would not watch anything animated because animated was for kids.
Yeah, I know a lot of people. It's like, no, not going to watch that.
Yeah. And it's like
animated.
There are so many great, thoughtful, profound animated films out there, and there are so many animated films out there that are not for kids, and it's just like
my favorite political thriller is a cartoon with huge robots in it. It's a robot fighting movie. Robots are in it for like a grand total of 5 minutes.
Okay, so what movie?
It's called Pat Lieber 2, and everybody hates it except me, but I love it. It's a great political
never
thriller.
Really thought you were gonna say robot jocks.
No, I love that movie too, for completely different reasons. That movie is amazing. But we're having meat. Best phrase ever. But yeah, it Pat Labor 2 is a really complex political thriller. There are big robots that fight in it for a few minutes because it's a political thriller that just happens to take place in a world. I think it was like Wrath of Khan, where somebody was just handed this IP and said, I don't know, make a movie. And they go, oh, I think I'd rather make a political thriller. Type.
All right.
Yeah. And so it ends up being, it's really, one of the things I really like about it is that it's approachable for me as a political thriller in a context where a political thriller would look completely differently because it's not White House Down or Broken Arrow or Explosion Congress Fest 2018 or something like that. It's a lot more, the context is different. And so it really lets me, I get to analyze the brain, the actual political part of the political thriller a little bit more than the explosions.
Right.
And there's just a time where it being animated actually improves the product.
Yeah.
Couldn't be done as well otherwise.
Yeah, heavy metal. This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic, 844-753-7842.
I wasn't thinking that one.
We're going to go to break. When we come back, I think we might continue this conversation a little bit and then talk about other cartoons in the body of the 45th President of the United States.
Listeners, would you like to be rich beyond your wildest dreams? The fastest kid in school? More sexy than Freddie Mercury? Smarter than Albert Einstein? More popular than Donald Trump? Well, buy Squid Ink. The product will make your dreams come true and change your life forever. Available at Camp Quest limited time offer. See Camp Quest for more details. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Side effects may include tentacle appendages, allergic reactions, puking, diarrhea, and possible death. Please see your doctor if side effects here while drinking Squid Ink. Bye.
There was a conversation Mike and I had, Ask an Atheist, whatever, that I don't know if we ever had it on the air, which would be my major refutation to Bill Maher, which was, wouldn't you prefer a world where people have mythologies but know they are fake?
Yes.
Like,
I like that.
Like, I've not met a lot of people who think that superheroes are real. I cannot say the number is zero, but
I haven't yet met Phoenix Jones.
Right. I mean the Stan Lee stuff.
Right.
Let's not get into biographies of sadness. I mean, isn't it great that you can have these mythologies? You can have all this crazy Greek and Roman stuff where, you know, gods and mortal guises or whatever, but everybody knows it's just a story, and they can get their meaning from it. There's flexibility in the meaning. Nobody has to get sacrificed. Nobody has to become a Vestal Virgin. I don't know Greek as well as Roman. Sorry.
Well, and more importantly than that is when you have a mythology that everyone accepts as a story, you can change it as needed.
Right.
Like, it is not blasphemy to
say, it often was.
Hey, yeah. There are some comics about Superman written in the 50s that are real awkward.
Yeah.
Let's just kind of like do better than that.
Yeah.
Let's rewrite that.
Yeah, and you can say, yeah, that's not really, that got sucked into an alternate timeline. Now we're just going to focus on the fact that Superman fought the Klan.
They absolutely did that with Greek myths, too, you know?
Right.
They did.
It, change it.
And then they would have schisms, like they do in comic book land.
Well,
I don't know that my metaphor really works.
Yeah.
Religions
do that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
And start taking it too seriously.
Fiction is, and here's one of the things. We as atheists are very critical of religion. And one of our main criticisms is that it's not a good place to get morals. The Bible is not a morally good book.
No.
Nor are most other religious texts. But the fiction we write to explore these ideas actually is a very good medium for finding good morals. There is a video online of all of the most profoundly interesting and ethical things that Captain Picard said over the course of Star Trek The Next Generation. And just listening, it's like a 15-minute clip. Just listening to that, I can learn more than from the entire Bible.
Right.
It's that good.
As a brief segue, I'm going to Picard Day this year.
Ooh.
Yeah, Picard Day is happening up at the Poodle Dog Inn. I forget what the day is.
December 16th, I want to say.
Okay.
Five?
Yeah, yep. Up in Fife. The Radio versus the Martians guys do it every year. It's their holiday festivity.
If you're a fan of Radio versus the Martians, it's real fun to just sit in that room and listen to voices and it's like, oh, I know that guy. Oh, I've heard that guy. Yeah. Oh, I know her.
Speaking of which, I'm on the most recent version of Podcast a la Vista talking about finally a movie I like. After how many years? Like,
oh, it's been, yeah, you've
5 years of this, and now I finally get to watch a movie.
Did it have Schwarzenegger in it?
Yes, it did.
Oh,
yeah. It was Total Recall. And
I'm a little envious because when Mike first announced that he was going to do a spinoff of Podcast a la Vista, just because, you know, Rayo versus the Martians panel episodes are so much work, and they,
yeah,
I can't believe they used to do those once a month.
Like, yeah, it was killing them.
Yeah, so when they first started that, he started asking people, it's like, hey, we want to do a panel show on Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. Would you be interested in Beyond? I'm like, yeah. He's like, all right, what movie would you want to be in? Like, has anyone picked Total Recall? He's like, no, not yet. I'm like, I want that one. And he's like, okay, we'll see what we can do. And then a while later, he's like, everyone wants that one.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I got dibs.
Yeah, you ended up getting it from me.
Yeah.
At least it's a Philip K. Dick story.
And it's one of the few Philip K. Dick stories that I really like. It's a good short story. It's like that in Valis, I think, is what I like.
Has almost nothing
like
to do
Valis?
With the movie.
I do.
Wow.
It's so weird. I love it. It's crazy.
It's the first Philip K. Dick novel I read, and it's just like, wait a minute, reality keeps changing.
Here's the thing. There is a remake of Total Recall from about
there was
6-7 years ago. It's very forgettable. Not bad. It's just kind of blah.
Yeah, exactly.
But I remember when it came out, people criticizing it for not following the source material, meaning it wasn't the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. But Arnold Schwarzenegger movie really did not follow the source material of that short
not
story at
all.
It's like an entire, they took one concept and just made their own really good film.
Also, the short story would be like two scenes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not much, not a lot of meat there. You know, you'd have to make movie soup, which is what they did, but it was Paul Verhoeven movie soup. So all the broth was blood. he says I'm gonna review a Schwarzenegger movie every month. I'm like, Total Recall? He's like, well, I'll see what I can do, because that's what Mike does, is I don't have my notes in front of me, so I'm gonna tell you, I'll see what I can do. I'm gonna look at my notes, I'll say, wow, there's a waiting list on that one a mile long. And there's a bunch of movies I didn't get, but the two I really wanted to get I did, which is Total Recall and Hercules in New York. I figured I would get Hercules in New York, because who'd pick that?
I've never actually seen anything. I saw the first few seconds of it with the dub voice.
It's an unwatchable mess.
It's a crazily watchable, unwatchable mess.
No, I got Terminator 3, which is a good one, because I'm like the rare defender of that film.
Yeah. Mm.
So
I was in the other room.
Was that the Lady Terminator?
No. Yeah.
Okay. The Terminatrix.
And I also, that's, I think I'm tapped for, when they get to it, Collateral Damage.
Oh, cool.
Which is, I'm tapped for that because I've never seen it. And like, I'm coming in completely fresh on this. I remember when it came out thinking, that looks all right. And then just never got around to it.
Yeah. They said they're halfway through the Catechism at this point. Right.
And I think Carol got tapped for Pumping Iron.
Really?
Oh, boy.
And the reason is because Carol's the closest they have to a sports fan.
That's a documentary,
close,
right?
Closest movie to a sport.
We're going to need movies? To like set a blast, like a a region of Terminal Damage out of El Vista Studios, because I cannot imagine Carol will respond favorably to that movie.
She's looking very forward. She hasn't watched it yet, but she's looking very forward.
I can imagine,
I mean, is that something with the plot, or is it a documentary?
I've never seen that.
I think it's a documentary.
Yeah.
It's my impression.
Documentaroid. I don't know.
Documentary.
Very well. I did my first real Arnold impression on that one.
Oh,
too.
You finally brought that out. Nice.
I did. Yeah. Well, I mean, it was the very end of the movie where he has the drill minigun. That's the it's my favorite because he's using the drill, and so it's not just him talking. It's him talking with the drill jacking him around. So he's like, screw, I love that. I love it. So that's a preview.
Yeah.
Of what you'll hear.
I've listened to the episode. It's fantastic. Go find it.
So we have two Donald Trump stories here. I might not get to them both, but I do want to point out that Donald Trump, both of these stories begin with Donald Trump. And I ask, and Becky is doing the writing, and I asked Becky, so why did you do that? She's like, well, I don't want to call him President Donald Trump, because I don't like the fact that he's president. And it started this conversation. I do kind of want your take on this. I make a big, when I write these stories, I use President Donald Trump. In fact, I go far enough to say Donald J. Trump, the 45th president of the United States, because I want my voice to drip. I want you to hear my emotional response when I'm forced to say that. And so you've got a lot of people on social media who don't like Donald Trump, who say, not my president. I say he is. He's totally my president. Insanity is a sign of the times. You must learn to let it fire you.
Mm-hmm. It makes me think of a t-shirt that I saw way back in the Bush administration that I really liked, because like the whole not my president, I feel like that really came up big in during Obama's presidency. Is that
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, say, yeah, not yeah, my president. Uh-huh. The idea you get to disown him because you didn't vote for him. But in the Bush presidency, I saw something similar, but with a shade of difference. And what it was, a t-shirt that said, I apologize for my president. I did not vote for him. And the same sentence repeated in 12 different languages on the front and back of the shirt.
That has that's a critical difference.
And I like that. Yeah.
That's what I think we need. It's like, no, this is unfortunately and disturbingly my president, because my country voted for him. He almost got like a majority of the votes. Not quite, but
yeah,
because...
And we also have to encounter, I don't think we're getting either story. There's 4 minutes left. Okay. Asking ID for cereal. He thinks that's a thing that happens, which just gives you some insight in how Donald Trump thinks the world works.
Yes.
That's the story.
He's obviously never bought cereal.
No, clearly not. And he doesn't know how an umbrella works either. So.
And can we stop with this voter fraud myth?
No. Nope.
Well, we can. He can.
Yeah. That's never ending.
My favorite story with that, there's a woman named Roxanne Rubin who actually, she's from Las Vegas, wanted to go out to prove how easy it is to vote illegally. So she went and voted and then tried to vote again and then got arrested.
Yeah.
Because, hey, look, yes, we actually have systems in place to put a stop to that.
Well, I also like focusing on the fact that he's the president of the United States, because it's not like when Mueller Moss occurs, which is what I'm now calling the Day of Reckoning. It's Mueller Moss, and we will celebrate by...
Oh, I was wondering why you're pronouncing massacre so...
Yeah. No, no, it's a Mueller Moss. It's the new holiday, and we're going to drink mead in origami paper cups made out of legal papers. So that's what we're doing. When Mueller Moss occurs, it's not like all of the conservatives of the United States are going to be raptured. They're still going to be here. And there's a fair chunk of conservatives in this country who don't like Donald Trump, and we're going to have to make common cause with them. And to play
a fair number of conservatives who are going to be fighting what's coming.
Yeah. And we're still going to have to live in this country with them. And it's still a democracy, last time I checked, with the usual caveats when one has against this wonderfully 18th century designed system that we've got that ignores the next 300 years of democratic innovation, I guess.
Right.
We're gonna have to, you know. So let's call him the president. Let's focus on the fact that he's the president, and let's make it clear that Trumpism is not necessarily conservatism, and in fact doesn't really look much like conservatism at all in some places.
Right. And I feel like the best thing you can do is just keep pointing out the way that conservatives are willing to ride the train to get what they want done. The story of the hypocrisy of this administration is so long and so repetitive and so tiring that you almost start losing track of how obvious it is.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that, like, we need to have standards in our own people and in the people across the aisle from us. And we need to be able to stand up and say, no, this is a level that we can't agree on.
For some people, I'm not sure there is a place where they can say that's too far.
Well, I keep bringing this up because, like I said, the conservatives aren't being raptured. Like, they're going to still be here when Donald Trump is gone.
Right.
And we're still going to have to try and have a country that has progress while they're still here. And while Donald Trump himself is an outlier, you know, he's a data point you'd throw out, and boy, would I like to. How many people hooked their train onto ignoring Monica Lewinsky when it suited their political purposes?
Right.
Hooking your train, hooking your cart onto questionable engines is part and parcel American politics. Maybe that should be part of the thing that we're talking about. Maybe that's a practice that America can no longer afford. Maybe the United States could move beyond that.
Right.
That's one of the nice things about this year's election.
What would that look like?
I think it might look like the 2018 president or 2018 midterm elections. I mean, look at the panoply of different. Okay, not the Republican side. That looks like a actuaries convention. But that's a joke. I actually know actuaries. I don't think any of them are men. Anyway, but it's a joke. Anyway, where in terms of in terms of the Democratic election, we got a whole bunch of new and interesting perspectives and people, and a lot more women than we're used to. And I think 2008. I would like 2018 to establish a new normal, at least in Democratic politics.
Right.
I might feel comfortable calling myself one again, which I generally do not. Mm-hmm. So
I hear you loud and clear on that.
Yeah. So that's so we didn't really do any of the news stories, but it's kind of a meta discussion about the nature of discussing Donald Trump, the president of the United States, in the impending with the coming of the Mueller moss, which everybody is looking forward to. I'm expecting it to be kind of boring. I'm expecting the charges to be policy and rote and basic.
30, 40, 50 pages of charges with dull stuff in it.
With dull stuff.
That will land him in prison?
Yeah, maybe? he's not going to be charged with sending Hitler back in time to start World War II. He's going to be charged with stuff that financial stuff, talking to people, you know.
And more importantly, he's not going to be charged.
That's true.
A sitting president will not be charged. Maybe there will be enough.
I think there's the possibility that it is that we'll have him so dead to rights that he has to go.
Yeah. I'm hearing a lot of people say the word RICO a lot, and I'm like, what, that guy from the 90s with the... Never mind. This is Ask an Atheist. 844-753-7842. Our website is atheist.radio. Our Twitter is AskAnAtheistWA. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Absolutely.
And yeah, so we didn't do the news stories, but I don't know. I felt like maybe taking a step back and having a meta discussion about our best word segment and how I feel about it. See you guys next week.